Matthew chapter 13, verses 24 and 30, it says, "Another parable put he forth unto them, saying, The kingdom of heaven is likened unto a man which sowed good seed in his field. But while men slept, his enemy came and sowed tares among the wheat and went his way. But when the blade was sprung up and brought forth fruit, then appeared the tares also. So the servants of the householder came and said unto him, Sir, didst not thou sow good seed in thy field? From whence then hath it tares? He said unto them, An enemy has done this. The servants said unto him, Wilt thou then that we go and gather them up? But he said, Nay, lest while you gather up the tares, you root up also wheat with them. Let both grow together until the harvest. And in the time of harvest, I will say to the reapers, Gather you together first the tares, and bind them in bundles to burn them, but gather the wheat into my barn. As I said last time, this shows, without a doubt, are all people equal? One is destined to be burned, the other is destined to be put in God's barn. And we are to let them grow until the harvest. I think we're in the harvest. My message will be about them, and I found some things that are kind of interesting to me. I hope they will be to you. It begins with this statement, when did the United States begin? Was it 1492 when Christopher Columbus sailed the ocean blue? Did he discover America? Well, Columbus didn't even set his foot on the land that became the United States of America. He landed in four separate voyages. He landed in the Bahamas. When we were in Bahamas, we saw the statue to him because he landed there. Jamaica, Haiti, Puerto Rico, which eventually became an American territory, Cuba, and other islands in the Caribbean, and he also landed in South America and also in Central America. But nowhere did Christopher Columbus discover America because he never set his big toe on the continent that became the United States of America. How they got that lie started, I do not know. Some say it was the Jamestown settlement in 1607. Others say it was before this in the Raleigh colony, but that was totally annihilated. It's known as the Lost Colony in 1585 and 86. Others say it was Plymouth Plantation in the year 1620. And there are a host of other starting points. But most will say it was the Pilgrim Christians who came to the United States from England and then Holland in 1620 and settled in Plymouth, Massachusetts, where really America begins. Who were these settlers? These settlers came from a Protestant church, and they were in Holland. They were a church in Holland. They were known as being separatists, not integrationists, separatists, who came to the new land to be what? A city set upon a hill. That's what they wrote. The church was originally from England and went to Holland. What did they go to Holland for? They ran out of England. They were in search of religious freedom. Although they were generously treated by the Dutch and were given freedom of worship, the pilgrims found that did not constitute all that was desirable in life. The instinct of separatism was strong within the pilgrim's heart, and they longed for a land of their own. In Holland, they were among people foreign in language and customs, and were distressed at seeing their children adopting their foreign customs. They determined again to go on pilgrimages and build for themselves new homes far from the vices of Europe and beyond the reach of the long arm of persecution. Hearing there was free land across the sea, they decided to face the known dangers for an opportunity to establish a more independent life for themselves and for their children. They were an all-white church, weren't they? Which came to America for the purpose that they might enjoy once more the political and religious freedom which they had lost in their English homes through the tyranny of King James I. The pilgrims placed a great emphasis on their liberty and their status as free men and women. The inspiration for this attribute, which became infused into our organic law, was undoubtedly derived from the scriptures, being referred to as the perfect law of liberty. It was through their newfound freedom that they could be servants of God. In many instances, the Bible points out a sharp contrast between the status of the free from that of the bond or the bondservant. Many of our ancestors came to this country under the status of a bondservant being indentured to a free citizen. It lasted for 6 years while learning the trade of the master. This was a principle of English common law which had originated from the Holy Scriptures. One place it's in Deuteronomy 15:12. And if thy brother, a Hebrew man or a Hebrew woman, be sold unto thee and serve thee 6 years, then in the 7th year thou shalt let him go free from thee. And that's the law they operated under. Many of the white people who came to the United States came as indentured servants, just like it says in Deuteronomy 15:12. Between 1/2 to 2/3 of the original American colonists came here on their own free will as indentured servants to help pay for the trip. Do you know the people on the in Plymouth came here as indentured servants? They had to help pay for the trip. They were white men and women and children. The highest percentage of indentured servants settled in Georgia. They served for 6 years, and after their term, they were given 50 acres of land and some tools to begin their time to farm for their own benefit. Now, the first seal of the United States was devised in the year 1777. It bore the symbols of 6 white European nations from which the United States had been populated. What 6 nations were they? England, Ireland, Scotland, France, Germany, and Holland. This reveals that these nations were, up to the time of the, what did our country start under? The Articles of Confederation. That was the first form of government we had. How long did we have that? 13 years before we had the Constitution. See, George Washington is the first president under the Constitution. We had 10 others under the Articles of Confederation, and I would say that probably nobody except Harrison, who's got a good memory, can remember who they are. And most people in school, they say they were under the Articles of Confederation, but they just forget who, they forget everything about it. But we had 10 presidents under the Articles of Confederation. These were all white nations. that created America as no other racial element had the know-how or spirit of exploration to do so. America was discovered by the white race. It was explored by the white race. And it was settled and colonized by the white race. Now we have the Mayflower Compact, written in the year 1620. That's almost 400 years ago. The first document of self-government written for the inhabitants of the new continent. It was drafted and signed by who? 41 adult Christian white males on board the Mayflower. No female signed it. It was Christian white males who signed the Mayflower Compact. All state charters and state constitutions. The intent of the people or governing body to maintain America as a white nation, pursuant to the organic law, is resoundingly revealed through the various state constitutions. They have done so by the inclusion of the white race under the provision of one for suffrage, that's voting. Only whites could vote. And not all whites. You had to own land, pay taxes. Jury duty, holding public office, and serving in the militia. Also, the exclusion of the colored races from these areas of government. Only whites could vote, go to the jury, hold public office, and serve in the militia. That's, you look at the state charters and constitutions, and that's what they say. The Declaration of Independence, 1776, was signed by 56 delegates of the Continental Congress who were all free, what? White men. And who had been elected by the free white males of the 13 states. The Articles of Confederation and Perpetual Union in 1777 were likewise ratified by only white delegates of the 13 states. It authorized the Committee of the States to agree upon the number of land forces and to make requisition from each state for its quota in proportion to the number of white inhabitants in each state. So if in the Mayflower Compact, the state charters and constitutions, the Declaration of Independence and the Articles of Confederacy all maintain and state that this new nation is to be a white nation by and for white people, then you tell me what happened. In the Constitution of the United States, the phrase, "We the people of the United States are the political body that created our form of government, and thus the white man can never be wholly denied the right of suffrage." The Constitution of the United States was written by the white race for the government of the white race and also for their posterity. As many historians will affirm, any particular culture is merely the outgrowth of the current religion of that society. It has also become apparent that the Christian nations of Europe were among the most advanced and prosperous cultures in the world. Yet America stands far out in front of any European nation in these areas, even though America was peopled from these very nations. For some reason, Christianity became more prominent and more a part of American ideology. Now, there's two reasons why America became a greater Christian nation than any of her European sister nations. What is it? The first reason. Europe was dominated by what? Powerful central church bureaucracies, such as the Roman Catholic Church, the Church of England, the followers of Martin Luther or John Calvin. Protestantism was the religion of the new nation of the United States of America. There was to be no all-powerful church established which controlled the thinking and religious practices of the whole people. The nation of Sweden's Lutheran. It's a state religion. Mimo Simons, 1496 to 1561. From him comes the Mennonites. He was a former Roman Catholic priest. He was persecuted by the Romanists for his pursuit of truth of the Bible. He was a Dutch Anabaptist who left the Catholic Church after he began to do something. We think he began to do. He's a priest. He had never read the Bible. Of course, you're talking 1561. The printing press, he didn't have the big printing press going on. He never read the Bible. He started reading the Bible and he left the Catholic Church. I think the Romanists were happy with that. Oh, you're reading the Bible. You could be whatever you want to be. No, they tried to kill him. Many were killed for doing so. It wasn't just Mimo Simons. There was Wycliffe, the translator, a multitude of followers of Luther, Calvin, and Simmons, and a host of Huguenots, Waldensians, Amish, and many other people who were killed. America became the land for the Protestants to experience their religious freedom. A new land, a place we can go and not be persecuted for what we believe. They suffered greatly in Europe for their beliefs and were different from the Catholic and the Church of England. Followers of Simon, Calvin, Luther, and others were the main immigrants to the United States of America. In America, the Protestants did not want any one of their different variations of their movement to be the main church in America. Would it be Baptist, Presbyterian, Methodist, Lutheran, Congregationalist, or any other view of Christianity? But they did not mean that there was going to be other faiths that would spring up in the nation. When we went up to Detroit, we saw this big Buddhist temple right on 75, right outside of, well, I guess it was outside of Toledo or in Toledo. Islam, Jewish, or even the hated Catholic would not be accepted. They were not going to be a multicultural, democratic society. What were they going to be? A Christian republic nation. The second thing was, in America, the people established self-governing bodies to incorporate Christian principles into the government, politics, and laws of society, as they had done with their own family governments. Christianity is not limited to the New Testament, but encompasses all precepts in the Bible. The truth is that government was established in America not to build monuments, not to tax the workers to support the non-workers, not to tax citizens of America to give money to foreign and anti-Christian governments. And you go last week's sermon, strangers and their governments. Not to finance and support abortion. Not to control labor, business, and industry. But government was established for the what? Protection of Christians. And the practice of Christianity in their families, societies, politics, economics, and so forth. That was the main purpose of the colonial government. And none of the colonial charters, compacts, etc. will one find the false and nonsensical ideas of religious pluralism where the colonists welcomed the followers of all the religions of the world. The legal roots of America are in Jesus Christ and the Christian faith. So this is how it began. America was a Christian white nation that very quickly succumbed to the exact opposite. What are we today? The multicultural. And I believe that's of Satan. Quakers, Jews, Roman Catholics, Quakers, blacks, women, Asians, Buddhists, Hindus, Muslims. How many of these people signed the Mayflower Compact? How many of these people signed the Declaration of Independence? How many signed the Articles of Confederation? How many signed the United States Constitution? I'll tell you. None. And no Jew, Roman, Catholic, or Quaker signed the Constitution, but they had their influence and rejoiced at the ratification of it. No religious test would be given for any office of the federal government, which opened the way for these three false religions, plus many more in the future, to be federal office holders. And it took 100 years for all the states to join in the federal government's lack of distinction, too. This started the process of changing the nation from a Christian whites-only nation to a pluralistic, democratic country. Now I'm going to talk about the history of the tares in America. Who was the first Jew to come to America? Most think it was a man by the name of Joachim Gans. He was of Prague, who was a descendant to the noted meteorologist scholar David Ben Solomon Gans from 1541 to 1613, who was a Jewish mathematician, historian, astronomer, and astrologer. Now, what did Joachim do? Joachim was sent to the New World in the year 1585. That's before the pilgrims came here, to study copper and iron smelting techniques of the native Indians. Can you believe that? Sir Walter Raleigh brought him to Roanoke Island, North Carolina, where he stayed 1 year to complete his research into speeding the processing of metals necessary to England's military success. And this Jew lowered the English smelters from a minimum of 16 weeks, that's 112 days, to purify a batch of copper to only 4 days. That's quite a significant lowering. He went back to Europe after 1 year. This vital information was used by the English in making cannons for the upcoming wars. But there's something that you have to remember. At that time, there were no Jews in England. In the year 1290, all Jews were what? Evicted from England. And they were not allowed back for how many years? 360 years, about. Isn't that incredible? When you study history, you got to remember this. This is hard for us to believe that there were no Jews who were in England from the year 1290 to around the year 1650 in England. Now, it was actually a very small number of them, but they had to do what? They had to do their religion in secret. But basically, there's no Jews in England. So Joachim Gans went from Germany to Roanoke for 1 year when there were no Jews in England at all. What happened in 1492? All Jews were evicted from Spain. It's called the Spanish Inquisition. Jews, Muslims, and other heretics to the whose mind? Roman Catholic mind. Were given three choices to choose from. Give up their heresies and become a Roman Catholic. If they didn't choose to become a Roman Catholic, they had to leave the country. Or if they didn't choose to become a Roman Catholic or leave the country, they would be tortured and executed. So Jews became crypto-Roman Catholics called Marranos. The majority fled from Spain, later Portugal. Many were tortured and executed. And this lasted from 1492 to what year? Would you believe 1924? 1492? Did someone say all the ocean blue? Where did the Jews go? You can put the map up there if you want, Randa. They went a lot of places. They went to the Balkans, Croatia, Macedonia, Turkey, Albania. They went to North Africa, Morocco, Algiers, Tunisia, and Egypt. They went to parts of Europe, France, Germany, Netherlands, Poland, Austria, Greece, Sicily, Crete, Yugoslavia, Italy. They went to the Middle East, Lebanon, and Palestine. They went to South America, Brazil, Colombia, Suriname, and Venezuela. They went to Central America, Mexico. They went to the Caribbean islands. Let's see. Curacao is right there. It's right near to Aruba. Now, there's Venezuela, Colombia. Here's Cuba. They went to Haiti. That's where Christopher Columbus landed, the first trip. They went to, Barbados and Jamaica. There's the country of Suriname. There's Brazil. There's Recife. That's where a lot of them went, Recife, Brazil. Venezuela, Colombia. We'll concentrate on the Jews who fled to the Caribbean islands. And South America is those places affect the history of America the most. And here's the part. You never had this. I didn't have this in school. Didn't have a thing about this. When Christopher Columbus arrived in Haiti, he had an interpreter, Luis de Torres. Luis was one of the first Jews who settled in Haiti. The year was 1492. What happened in 1492? They were kicked out of Spain. They had to leave. He went to Haiti, interpreter of Christopher Columbus. Other Jews fled the Spanish Inquisition and lived in the islands of Cuba, Barbados, and then Suriname, which is down here. The history of the Venezuelan Jews, well, there's Venezuela. In the middle of the 1600s, a small collection of records suggests the groups of Muranos. Who Muranos? They were the Jews who became Roman Catholic. They lived in Caracas, right there. And then this place right here is called Maracaibo or something. Yeah, there we go. Maracaibo. That sounds good. Maracaibo. Now, here's the part that really gets interesting. When Portugal retook control of Suriname, put the other map up, Suriname, either one of the two, where a lot of Jews had fled, the king of Portugal gave those who wanted to depart, well, they kicked them out too. They gave them some time to settle. They supplied them with 16 ships and safe conduct to leave for Holland. The Dutch gave them an opportunity to settle in. Put the other map back up now.
Which one?
South America map. So the Jews, they could go from here, Suriname, to Recife, that city. And a lot of them took that opportunity. Once in Brazil, many Jews were forced to move into the northern Dutch colonies in the Gahanas, which is up here. Later, in Portugal retook control of Recife, several shiploads left Recife in the year 1654 and headed for Holland to escape the terror. But one of the vessels, which was going back to Holland, was captured on the high seas by a French privateer. And after the passengers had been robbed of everything, they were put ashore at Dutch New Amsterdam. When these 23 men, women, and children who were going back to Holland were captured by the French, robbed of everything they had, and sent to Dutch New Amsterdam. That's why they went to Dutch, because they were from the Dutch islands, the Dutch country. And they're going back to Holland. They land on the lower tip of Manhattan Island, painless, bewildered, forsaken. They were ordered to leave by the next ship by Peg Leg Governor Peter Stuyvesant. Why? Because the Dutch believed what the Bible said to do with their enemies, yes. The thrifty Dutch colonists wanted no beggars and blasphemers around living off the community. Now, I've got a quote. If you put the quote up by Peter Stuyvesant, what he wrote, The colonial governor attempted to have the Jews expelled. He wrote a letter to the directors of the Dutch West India Company in the fall of 1654. Look what he said in this. In this letter, he called these people what? The deceitful race? Such hateful enemies? And blasphemers of the name of Christ? Be allowed to further infect and trouble this new colony to the distraction of your worships and the dissatisfaction of your worship's most affectionate subject. Well, thank goodness Peter Stuyvesant wrote a good letter. The average Christian does not know anything about that. They don't know they have any enemies. They don't know there's a deceitful race. Or there's blasphemers of Jesus Christ. Peter Stuyvesant was denied his request for financial reasons. This was one of the biggest mistakes in the history of the United States. What should the Dutch have done? Evicted him. Just like England did. Just like Spain and Portugal did. Many of these same people were invested in the Dutch West India Company. Within 10 years, the British captured New Amsterdam. It's not called New Amsterdam anymore. It's called New York. The English captured it, changed the name. But wait a minute. The Jews had been banned from all English lands from the year 1290, right? What year is this? 1654? Are the Jews still banned in England in 1654? No. They had just been liberated. By who? Oliver Cromwell had just lifted this prohibition. They were then grudgingly permitted to remain, thus becoming in the year 1654 the first, what? Jewish community in America. That community grew slowly, as did the colonial population in general, even after the British replaced the Dutch in 1664, when New Amsterdam became New York. By the year 1776, although hundreds were fighting in George Washington's armies, there were fewer than 3,000 Jews in the newly independent United States, and most of them were Sephardim Jews. After the American Revolution, however, there was a steady trickle of Jews from Central and Eastern Europe, the Ashkenazim Jews, whose ancestors had not come from Spain. But the Sephardim remained the dominant element. They were religious traditionalists, aristocratic and proud of their ancient lineage, which dated back to the Golden Age of Spain. Even in colonial America, they were among the aristocracy, with the already ancient date of 1654 as the time of their beginning. And they looked down upon their Ashkenazi brethren, not only because they were newcomers, ignorant of the language and customs of the land, but they worshiped differently in their synagogues, and because they were mostly poor and humble, and also because they were of another racial line. Nevertheless, they permitted a few of them here and there to join their congregations, although they never really accepted them. And the Ashkenazim usually broke away and formed their own congregations as immigration from Central Europe continued. Most Christians don't know there's two main Jews, Sephardim and Ashkenazim. Sephardim are from Esau. Now, about the time that the one boatload of Jews arrived in New Amsterdam, about the year 1660, when these Jews arrived in New Amsterdam, what place here do you think was dominated by Jews? What was their principal haven in the New World? Jamaica. 1660, the Jews controlled Jamaica. Why? It was situated in the middle of the shipping lanes. Jamaica was an ideal base from which to strike its Spanish shipping to revenge its what? What had Spain done to the Jews? Kicked them out. They want revenge. And engage in contraband trade. Jamaica's Jews were the major players in both activities. Now, there was a large earthquake in 1692 that brought a climatic end to the pirate port when the sea swallowed two-thirds of Port Royal. From an infamous pirate capital, Jamaica by 1698 had become a sugar island, worked by 40,000 what? Slaves. And after 1713, the center for slave distribution in the Caribbean and North America. It was then that England's Royal African Company was awarded the monopoly rights Spain granted to conduct the slave trade with Spanish America. I'll get back to that in a little bit. I want to go to America. So they're there. I said it, but I didn't emphasize it. What do you think? What was the occupation of a lot of these Jews on a lot of these islands and nations? What do you think they were? Pirates. The pirates of the Caribbean should be the Jewish pirates of the Caribbean. Were there Jews in that movie? It should have been Jews. In America, the first major, now the first place was New Amsterdam, which became New York. But the first major Jewish settlement in America was where? Newport, Rhode Island. At the same time, Jamaica was the major place of Jews in the New World. Newport, Rhode Island, and Jamaica. The Jewish population increased by a slow rate. The principal immigrants coming from Spain, Portugal, and the West Indies. Now, there's something I'm just going to mention because it's going to be played in a later sermon I'm going to give. Masonic activity mushroomed during the 17th and 18th centuries. It even encapsulated some of America's founding fathers. The Jews began to arrive in Newport, Rhode Island, first from Recife, Brazil. Remember Recife, Brazil? And then Barbados and Jamaica. The oldest synagogue was named the Toro Synagogue in Newport, Rhode Island. It was built in 1763. Now, the founding families were Toronto, who's named the synagogues after, Hayes, Myers, Lopez, Hart, Sexus, and Riviera. I'm going to tell you about the family of the Hayes. Moses Michael Hayes was a brother-in-law of Rabbi Isaac Toro. Now, that's another founding father, right? And a prosperous merchant. Well, what did he do? Hayes introduced what? The order of the Scottish Rite, Masonic Order, to America? You tell me they're not Jewish? He was the Grand Master of Massachusetts Masonic Lodge with Paul Revere was a Mason, and a friend of Thomas Paine, and he helped organize the King David Lodge in 1769. Absolutely. Hayes moved from Newport to Boston in 1780 at the Old Colony House, one of the oldest existing government buildings in America, in June 1776. Hayes delivered a now-famous letter to Rhode Island General Assembly protesting the requirement that Jews sign a Christian test before holding an office in government. Why? He was Jewish. Colonial Jews were so few in number that their history could be safely ignored. Were it not for two things. The society they encountered in the colonies offered a welcome contrast to the intolerance and hostilities that had characterized the Jewish experience in Europe over the preceding centuries. That alone made the British colonies of North America a remarkable exception in the saga of Jewish dispersion. The American Revolution gave birth to a nation, with eventually a constitution that embraced an unprecedented degree of religious freedom and liberal ideas of democratic equality. The new federal government of the United States was to be utterly blind to differences of religion, allowing all to vote and hold public office in federal elections. Jews had never experienced anything like it in all their 1,700 years in the dispersion. Previously, the Jews of North America had been sojourners, tolerated, even welcomed in some places, but not in others. They were known as the wandering Jews for a reason. The Revolution, however, had changed the social and political landscape. Jews had overwhelmingly supported the cause of independence and had fought alongside other patriots. Although the struggle for political rights at the state level would take several decades, American Jews now felt entitled to rights guaranteed by the United States Constitution and stepped forward only to fight for them. The new sense of pride and self-assurance was already evident in the 1790s during the debates between the Federalists and the Jeffersonian Republicans, when Jews openly defended themselves against the occasional attacks of the righteous racial enmity of the Federalist writers. Jews were eager to join in the political life of the nation and to be seen as completely American. They marched in parades celebrating the ratification of the United States Constitution. They had been part of Freemasonry, a movement to which many of America's founding fathers also belonged. There were some who resented the Jews, but almost every religious group in America had its enemies. By the 1820s, American Jews, although still extremely few in number, felt that they were as American as any other social or religious group. Now my conclusion. The Spanish Inquisition forced many Jews to flee the country, just like it happened in England in 1290. The most adventurous among them attacked and plundered Spanish fleets while forming allegiances with other European powers to ensure the safety of Jews living and hiding in the New World. Now we have Abraham Cohen Hurricuse, an arms dealer who used his cunning and economic muscle to find safe haven for Jews. And Moses Cohen Hurricuse, Abraham's brother, helped plan one of history's largest heists against who? Spain. Why? They kicked him out of the country. In 1628, Hurricuse set sail with Dutch West India Company Admiral Petit Hein, whose own hatred of Spain was fueled by 4 years spent as a galley slave aboard a Spanish ship. Hurricuse and Hein boarded Spanish ships off of Cuba and seized shipments of New World gold and silver worth, in today's dollar, over $1 billion. Whoa! See, Spain was coming over and getting gold and silver from the Indians, taking it back to Spain. The Jews set up pirate ships. They captured the ships and captured the money. What did Moses Cohen Hurricuse and others, pirates, they went on to lead the Jewish contingent in Brazil, and he established his own pirate island off the Brazilian coast. Anybody know the name of that island? Treasure Island. After the recapture of Brazil by Portugal in 1654, Moses ended up as an advisor to Henry Morgan, who was the leading pirate of the time. Even though his role in the raids was disclosed during the Spanish Inquisition, he was never caught. Now, what happened to the money the booty that Moses Cohen Herakles got. He got over $1 billion of goods and coins, right? What did he do with it all? Now, in today's money, that's worth, I don't know, probably $1 trillion. Who knows? It was used to bankroll the Sephardim, that's the Jews of Esau, of Recife, Brazil. That's where they went. And then when the Jews fled Recife for the West Indies, their Heracleist fortune bankrolled their commercial enterprises. And when Jews started to land on the shores of what country? America. Their Heracleist fortune helped build a nation. Soon, Newport, Rhode Island included ship owners from Mexico and Brazil, traders from Peru and Colombia, and ship captains and pilots from the island of Nevis and Barbados. Together, their knowledge of New World trade was unsurpassed. So the Jews came to Newport, Rhode Island, and the money from the pirates financed it. Situated in the middle of the shipping lanes, Jamaica was the ideal base in which to strike at Spanish shipping and engage in contraband trade with the mainland. Jamaica's Jews were major players in both activities, and the Jews were the main players involved in trading slaves. They owned the ships, and they made large profits in this business. Listen to what they write about this. They came with ships carrying African blacks to be sold as slaves. The traffic in slaves was a royal monopoly. And the Jews were often appointed as agents for the crown in their sale. They, the Jews, were the largest ship chandlers in the entire Caribbean region, where the shipping business was mainly a Jewish enterprise. The ships were not only owned by Jews, they were manned by Jewish crews and sailed under the command of Jewish captains. That's from the book Jews and Judaism in the United States. Jewish merchants played a major role in the slave trade. Where was that in our history books? In fact, in all the American colonies, whether French, British, or Dutch, Jewish merchants frequently dominated. Now, they had, the help of these pirates, all this money they captured to finance them. And they do that. They help one another. This was no less true on North American mainland, where during the 18th century, who participated in the triangular trade? Jews. They brought ships from Africa to the West Indies and there exchanged them for molasses, which in turn the molasses were taken to New England and converted into rum for sale in Africa. Now here, name some people. Isaac da Costa of Charleston in the late 1750s. David Franks, very common name, of Philadelphia in the late 1700s. And Aaron Lopez of where? Newport. Dominated what? Jewish slave trading on the American continent. That's for the book Jews in Colonial Brazil. The buyers who appeared at the auction were almost always who? Jews. And because of their lack of competitors, they could buy slaves at low prices. If it happened that the date of such an auction fell on a Jewish holiday, the auction had to be postponed. All through the 18th century into the early 19th century, Jews in the North were to own black servants. In 1820, over 75% of all Jewish families in Charleston and Richmond, Virginia, and Savannah, Georgia, owned slaves. Almost 40% of all Jewish householders in the United States owned one slave or another. The historic fact is less than 5% of non-Jewish whites in the South owned slaves. Now, there weren't that many Jews compared to all the whites, but that's the percentage. Less than 2% of whites owned slaves in pre-Civil War, while 40% of Jewish households owned slaves. In other words, Jews were 2,000% more likely to own slaves than whites. So I'm going to ask you a question. Why is there a collective white guilt assigned for the slave trade, but no collective Jewish guilt? Most blacks and whites do not know that it was the Jew who owned the ships and were the owners of most of the slaves taken from Africa. In Jamaica, there were 40,000 slaves there at one time in Jamaica that they owned. They were owners of slaves in South America, the Caribbean islands, and the United States. Why are black Americans and white Americans not allowed to know who were the primary slave traders and owners were? The Jews have got the books, and they control the press, and they keep it quiet. The Jews were merchants of the world. They were evicted from England, Spain, some Caribbean islands, Suriname, and Brazil. They became the pirates of the sea. They avenged Spain for their expulsion by stealing billions of dollars of goods and coins from them. With this money, they funded the settlements in the New World. Aaron Lopez of Newport, Rhode Island, became a major shipper in the slave trade of the Western Hemisphere. The Jews were the owners and traders of the slave market for several millenniums. Jews were the largest percentage of any people of the New World who were the owners of slaves. They had done a very good job keeping this a big secret. What a strange story that this is not known by most people, even in the United States today. Tares and wheat, you don't pull them up until they what? They grow to full. And then they show their fruit. Jesus said, "You shall know them by their fruit." And when you see the fruit, you then pull them up. And you put them in bundles to be what? Burned. Isn't the Bible a great book? Blessed be the Lord God of Israel.